Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I'm Brian Nemhauser. You can find me, all that we do on this show, at Hawk Blogger on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much everywhere. And it is a special week. It is a special week. We don't get these weeks very often where the Seahawks are hosting a divisional round playoff game. Not only that, but they're doing it against rival San Francisco 49ers. And to kick off this week, there's nobody I would rather talk to about this game and about life in general than Matt Hasselbeck, who joins us. Matt, how are you doing on this fine Tuesday?
I'm doing great. You know, I've noticed you're a little bit more ornery about this matchup. You know, I don't know if there's like, you're doing that like Ben Johnson, Matt LaFleur thing where like, you know, you're normally like a really nice guy. I'm sure Ben Johnson's a really nice guy. And he's up there and he's like, I hate this team. You know, Matt LaFleur, I don't like him. You know, like whatever it is, like leaning into the rivalry and like, I don't know if that's what you're doing or if it's like really, really genuine, but it's awesome. It's pretty cool. It's bringing me back to the T.O. Sharpie days, you know, where like there was this big, big thing with him and Sean Springs and he grabbed the Sharpie from the luxury suite and then signed the football. And it was just like, oh, this is so disrespectful and blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out like the guy he got the Sharpie from and signed the football for was like both of their like financial advisors, like they shared and they like don't hate each other. And it just, but it just added to this like excitement of the rivalry because the NFC West, you know, really wasn't a thing until I think 02. And right. then it was a thing. And then geographically it is a great rivalry. And then, you know, between the Rams, the Seahawks, the Niners, you know, even the Cardinals a little bit, you know, it's cool. So I don't know. I kind of want to hear the real scoop or not, you know, you can keep it a secret, but you haven't been you when it comes to that, like a little bit more trash talking than I've.
Yeah. There we go right there. Does that tell
that
you
is a great t-shirt. That is a great t-shirt.
SimplySeattle.com. Code HawkBlogger15 gets you 15% off because you know what, Matt, it is 100% genuine. I am the things you said. I'm generally very nice. I try to lead a kind life, generous life. I honestly do. It's values, principles. But when you've dealt with year after year of just the absolute like bottom dwelling of this 49er fan base, I'm telling you, man, and like most of it
sounds so nice. You don't sound so nice.
Most of it's in good fun. I worked in the Bay Area like for a lot, so I have a lot of friends that are already texting me. They're all 40, like, but I hate even that little part of them. Yeah, like I like them as people, but I hate that part of them. I'll tell you really quick, after the 2019 game when the 49ers came in to Seattle. This is a game where the Seahawks were so banged up that they brought Marshawn Lynch out of retirement, Robert Turbin out of retirement. They lost Chris, Carson and all the guys. Anyway, I've been kind of teasing them that week a little bit about like, man, it would be really embarrassing for the 49ers to lose this game. They're so much healthier. They're so much better. Anyway, they won. 49ers fans tried to dox me. They tried to publish the address to my house to encourage people to come and do harm to me and my family. So it's not just,
all right, so it's real.
I don't like this fan base. I wish horrible things to this fan base and I hope it all happens again this weekend. But you know, I do that all mostly with a smile on my face. So, you know, what did you think, like, to get to this point, this wild card weekend, man? Like, those are some surprising games in there.
I love wild card weekend. It's not the best football. Like, I think championship weekend, AFC, NFC championship weekend is the best football of the year. But wild card weekend is the most fun weekend of football. And, you know, the NFL now, they spread it over Saturday, Sunday, Monday. But no, it's really great. And I've been a part of some crazy, crazy wild card games in my career. My first year, I was with the Packers with, you know, Mike Holmgren, and it was Brett Favre versus, you know, Steve Young and T.O. with that crazy catch. And the part that people don't remember about that one is that Jerry Rice had fumbled earlier in the, you know, the basically that fourth quarter that really we thought we won it. And that was Mike Holmgren's last game in Green Bay. And everyone in that locker room that had been with him knew that he was on his way to Seattle. and everyone was crying and hugging. And I was kind of like, why is everyone crying? Like, you know, it was a wild, wild game, like one for the ages. Mm-hmm. And then we've had so many, like the Jordan Babineau, Tony Romo blew the snap. We had the Al Harris pick that I threw. We had the third time around against the Rams when Bobby Ingram, you know, I thought he caught it and he didn't. You know, I threw it a little too hard. And we had the Beastquake game. You know, when I was with the Colts, we had this crazy comeback where Andrew Luck put a cape on and basically had a Frank Reich type game. So, I mean, and the weekend kind of started out that way with just like, what just happened? So I thought it was really fun. And, you know, if the Seahawks keep going like we think they can, you know, they're going to face a bunch of these teams. And it's just wild. Like, you know, I kind of drop on a whiteboard like I did when I was playing game plans. I drop the schedules and kind of like notes and stuff. But, you know, Josh Allen's been Superman. You know, if they face him, the Patriots are very much like the Seahawks in a lot of ways, maybe a year behind. Houston's defense is incredible. Like, mm-hmm. You'd be better off like literally dropping back and throwing the ball out of bounds than trying against their defense if you wanted a good passer rating.
Yeah.
The Rams were lucky. I mean, I think the Rams, you know, this might be blasphemy to you and people listening, but I think the Rams might be the best team in football. Really? They might be.
Yeah.
They got lucky.
That's fair.
They got lucky, you know, and you know, if not the Seahawks and the Rams, I think are the two best teams. The Bears, cardiac Bears, like you know, left for dead again, and they do something crazy. And then you get the Niners, which is a really interesting team. And I don't think they're the best team in football, but this is a tough matchup for us and could be our kryptonite if we're not careful.
Yeah. Yeah. I think all of that is fair about the Rams. I like 100%. I think a lot of folks feel that way, even though they haven't been playing their best football of late. I got to take a quick detour because you'd have an interesting perspective, I think, on this. So the Packers situation, I'm not that interested, but I'm interested in your thoughts. They lose that game. LaFleur has not performed well in the playoffs. Jordan Love generally still has not performed that well. He played well in the first half of that game, but has not performed that well in the playoffs. They're calling for LaFleur's head in Green Bay. What's your take on the direction of that Packers team and the relationship with that fan base, which is very intense? Is this a situation where they should be looking for a new coach, or is it careful what you wish for?
No, it's not. And listen, that's the same fan base that, you know, were calling for me to start over Brett Favre when he like hurt his thumb. Like, you just chill out. You own like one stock and you think you own the team, you know, chill out. No, they're nuts a little bit. Like, they're spoiled in a sense. Mm. You know, like they think the success that Matt LaFleur has had is just normal. It's not. He's great. You need to keep Matt LaFleur, which I think they're doing. And then I think the other thing you need to do, you need to work your tail off to keep Jeff Hafley in the building. He's a really great defensive coordinator. And, you know, I saw firsthand, he was the head coach at Boston College. And like, you know, like in the middle of the spring, basically, he just walked away. He was like, I don't like this head coach. I don't like college football. Like, we've kind of ruined it with Portal and NIL and all that. But like, I don't like being the head coach because I don't get to coach. I'm just like an administrator. You know, I do press conferences and injury report. I want to coach. I want to be with the guys. And so he just walked away to his buddy, Matt LaFleur, and said, hey, I'll come be your coordinator. So I think if they got to just keep him in the building. That's what I think. You get Micah Parsons next year, healthy, training camp, build a plan and, you know, work together. And then offensively, you know, Jordan Love was outstanding in the first quarter. I think he had four touchdown passes. Sorry, in the first half, I think. But there's something about it. He's still a young quarterback. And I just see a little bit when they coach him, it's like they're coaching Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Like, the fundamentals are going away. And like, I know you're super talented. And I'm a huge Jordan Love fan, but like, fundamentals matter. And as I watch the wild card weekend, there are a lot of quarterbacks that are not playing next week because their fundamentals have just gone to the wayside. And I believe the coaches have let it happen. You know, like, I know this quarterback makes so much more money than you and his job security is more than you. And like, you don't have that maybe juice, but like, do your quarterback a favor and stay on the fundamentals. Like, I don't care. Like, that it's mandatory. You know, the best golfers in the world have a swing coach and they tell them the truth. They don't just like kiss to them. It doesn't do anybody any good. So, you know, just that's not just that quarterback. It's a bunch of quarterbacks, but truly like, fundamentals matter and it shows up. I think it shows up like it just does. So
what is that anyway, dynamic like?
That's my
what
rant. Is that? Sorry.
No, this is great. This is great. What is that dynamic like? Because you kind of named it there, that quarterback coaches are, you know, can come and go. They're replaceable. That's the reality. The
head quarterback. Head coaches too.
Head coaches, sure.
I've seen it. They kiss up to the quarterback because, like, hey, you know, you've got the ear of the owner, or hey, your opinion's going to matter a lot for sure.
So how does that, like, who's done that well in your opinion? And how, like, how often is it a situation where a quarterback isn't actually being coached the way that they need to because of this kind of deference that gets created?
I think you see it in the NBA too. I think you see it like in other leagues, you see it in other sports, but this has been my experience. The quarterbacks love it. They crave it. They're kind of used to everybody kissing up to them. They see right through it. And so, you know, whether like it was the beginning of my career, it was Brett Favre, or the end of my career, say it was Andrew Luck, you know, those guys, there was a common thread, like, hey, coach me hard. Don't coach me different. In fact, you kind of ruin the respect of my teammates when you like baby me. Like that's why I really, really appreciated when Pete Carroll came in initially, and he did this initially. And I know he didn't do it in Vegas, but like he did this initially. It was like, hey, you know, we're going to tell the truth Monday. Like, we're going to call it like it is, you know. And I don't know what it was like when I left Seattle with Pete, like if he still continued to do that, but he did that in a real way. And it reminds you of the stories that you hear of the kind of the glory years with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, you know, some of like guys like Bruce Arians, like you're like, whoa, if you're getting on him, if you're telling the truth to him, you can say it to anybody. And I just, that's a great thing. First of all, it's good for you, the player, to get coached and, you know, constructively criticized. And then it's also just good for the entire, I think, the organization, for the team. Like, hey, the standard is the standard. Like, we didn't set this standard. This standard was set by others, and we're striving for it.
So does that help, like, kind of outside the system quarterback coach like Jordan Palmer, who works with Sam Darnold and Josh Allen, something like that? Do quarterbacks seek out guys like that because they'll be more honest and direct than they'll get from sometimes their own team?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, Jordan's created a great little community of guys that work with him in the offseason. And, you know, I think it's like a brotherhood. You know, when I was growing up, there were things like Quarterback Challenge. And, you know, those guys got together and they'd support each other's charity golf tournaments and stuff like that. And it's kind of changed through the years of like what that looks like. You know, those things kind of go away. And then the Pro Bowl used to be a thing, and that's kind of gone away. And so, and now, you know, nobody even goes at the quarterback position. And then now they don't even play the game. But no, I think there's a lot that goes into it. You know, it's looking in the mirror and say, hey, what are three things I want to get better at next offseason? Maybe it's even, but at the end of the day, I just think like your real season is happening like now, you know, and the guys you're spending, like when you're a quarterback, you go to work, it's dark out. You go home, it's usually dark out. And so like, these are the people you're with. In a way, what do you do all day? You watch film a lot of the time of you in slow motion. Like everything you do, you watch your warm up, you know, you sit there for like literally 15 minutes and you're on a line and you like watch the first step. It's like, if it's you on film, it's not that boring. If it's not you and you're just like watching the guy ahead of you on the depth chart, man, it is like, keep your eyes open, boring. So, you know, I just think that you want someone that's actually helping you get better, not someone that's buddying up to you or just kind of, you know, skimming over. I mean, ultimately, I think Mike Holmgren said this a lot. You know, when he'd be really hard on us, he'd say, guys, like, I know you think I don't like you, but it's my job to push you to be even better than you even think you could be. And, you know, I just appreciated it. You know, I didn't always love it. You know, I didn't always agree. But like at the end of the day, he was right. And it was helpful and it was hard. But again, that's like one of the things that made Sundays like not as hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's honestly relevant to anyone's job, anyone that's been in a job. That like really good leaders actually really appreciate people that are honest with them and give true feedback, because it gets to be very rare that people are willing to kind of speak truth to someone who might be in a more powerful position. So I gotta wonder about where your head goes when you've got this unique situation for the Seahawks and the 49ers, where for the Seahawks, the last team they played was the 49ers. It wasn't that long ago. It's also the third time that they will have played each other. And it's a divisional game that they've played, you know, now for a few years, right? At least Mike McDonald involved. What do you do as a player, as a coach, when you head in? Do you just focus on yourself? Do you like, oh, we got a zig instead of zag? Like, how do you think about this kind of unique situation?
Well, it's really unique, but it's in a way, I guess it's not that unique because it does happen. It could happen again, you know, the following week. You know, I was growing up, my dad played for the Los Angeles Raiders and won the Super Bowl and, you know, in 84, so the 83 season, and a team they played three times that year in the AFC West were the Seattle Seahawks. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the Seahawks won the first two matchups. I was sitting on the bus at the top 50 thing on our way to an event, and I sat next to Dave Craig, and he was the one kind of filling me in on like the details of this story. So, if I get it right,
a good source. It right. It's a good source.
He was a good source, and he wasn't as happy about it. I was like, "Oh yeah, it was great. Won the Super Bowl. You know, it was also, you know, Marcus Allen, reverse field. You know, it was the Redskins back then. Joe Theismann. They were heavily favored." And he's like, "Oh yeah, well, let me tell you about that season." You know, so he had a different perspective on it. But anyway, I had heard that from my dad, kind of like growing up, and we were sort of struggling beating the Rams three times. You know, the greatest show on turf, Mike Martz and company, and you know, to answer your question, it's a lot of things. Number one, it's a self-scout. So you take out your game plan book and you have like, call it like, you know, whatever, 240 plays in there. And you sort of like highlight the plays you actually showed on tape in the game. All right, this is what we showed. Do we want to keep it or do we want to have a compliment off of it? Let's just say we ran outside zone to the right five times and it really gashed them. Do we want to stick with it or do we want to say, hey, let's, on our naked bootlegs this week, let's fake outside zone to the right and have a bootleg off of it or a play action shot off of it? Or do we want to just window dress it with a different personnel group, motion, formation, and just stay with the play? Or do we want to have the offensive line block it exactly the same way, but we just use different ball handling? You know, an example of that, like our bread and butter play was 93 blast. Max Strong leading on the weak side linebacker and, you know, handing it off to Sean Alexander. Well, maybe we've played him, you know, this is the third time. Instead of handing the ball off, we're going to maybe offset Max Strong and we're going to pitch the ball. So the line, we call it, you know, 93 flip. And so the line, they're just blocking 93 blast. Nothing has changed for them. They just do what we've been doing all year. Max Strong slides over a little bit and Sean catches a pitch. And that's the only difference, really. So it seems like it shows way different to the defense, but it's really not that different to us. You know, so that's an example. And then I think trick plays off of stuff like that is another thing. But, you know, there's different things that you can do at like the basic level on a Tuesday, Wednesday, as you prepare for the game.
How much does it leak into the thought process what happened in that most recent game? And what I mean by that is, like, for the 49ers, their offense was humbled in that game. They, like, could do nothing. And so it was a pretty – like, it was one of the worst offensive outcomes for the 49ers in Kyle Shanahan's career as a head coach. The Seahawks played better on offense, but they only scored 13 points. They've only scored 13 points in both games against the 49ers. So is it more likely that, you know, the 49ers are going to make meaningful changes on offense to try to switch up the result, and the Seahawks are going to be like, we're going to do the same defense because it worked great? Is it more likely that the Seahawks are going to be like, well, yeah, we only scored 13 points, but we played pretty well and we'll just stick with the same thing? Like, how do you think about that kind of adjustments?
Well, the defense is going to do one thing and the offense is going to do another thing. Like those two sides never talk. Like when you're at work in the meetings, like you, like when I was, you know, say Lofa Tutupu was my teammate in the middle linebacker on the other side, like I would never see him. Like I'd see him like at lunch and then at practice. And then like, you know, so you're never together that way. So the defensive plan, I think you got to be careful if you're the Seahawks defense, because you in the secondary might think like, oh yeah, we had this covered. They did nothing. Well, yeah, they didn't have Trent Williams. You know, they didn't have their left tackle. They didn't have their best lineman. So like when you think things were covered, if Brock Purdy had more time, maybe it wasn't covered. I think Brock Purdy, you know, going into that game, I said, here's what the Seahawks kind of struggled with in my mind as a defense. This is a great defense. Like this is an amazing defense. But they struggled a little bit, and they dominated Carolina, but they struggled a little bit with Bryce Young when he would leave the pocket. Yes. And when you have a great pass rush, like it's hard to have a great pass rush and also kind of, you know, like not cut it loose all the way. And so I got, that was a fear I had of Brock Purdy. Now it never came to that, but sometimes, you know how that is. It's like a shoestring, you know, got through or didn't get through situation. On the offensive side, I think it is different. I don't think we played, we ran the ball really well, particularly to the right side, but I don't think we played well. Like we played really well in critical moments late in the game. Cooper Kupp, two huge third down conversions. But there's a lot to kind of just like tighten the screws on a little bit. And special teams didn't have a great, you know, so I don't know. I think the Seahawks will be ready. I don't think they'll be like take it. There's no complacency, I don't think. But when you study that film, because I've been in that situation, you study the film, you don't have a great feeling. You're like, man, we could have been so much better. We could have been like, and that's what you're doing every single day. You're rewatching that game film, sliced and diced in different cutups. You're watching, you know, all the 11 personnels, and then you're watching all the third downs, and then all the 2 minutes, and like that one play that you hate seeing might show up in all these different splices of cutups, and you're just like, please let me get out there another game and show better.
Given what you know and what you saw in that game, which offense do you think is more likely to get better, significantly better in this one?
Yeah, well, both buy low, sell high. I mean, the Niners were atrocious. I mean, I think Christian McCaffrey ran for like 23 yards. Brock Purdy, didn't have a Brock Purdy type day. Like that was tough. I don't think either quarterback threw for 200 yards, you know, and I don't think the Seahawks ran the ball well, but didn't have a 100-yard rusher. It was more of a committee type thing. But like, if I'm recalling, like they kind of had their way in the run game, which was like a little bit like dominating. But complimentary football does factor into it. So yeah, I think the Niners will have a much better day. I still think the Seahawks get the win, and they should get the win. There's a lot of reasons they should get the win. I just think that you got to be careful because this is a team with nothing to lose that has showed the propensity to pull trick plays from like 2019 and, you know, kind of have this like Kyle Shanahan-esque sort of game plan where like, we got nothing to lose, man. We got nothing to lose. And they're a confident bunch. Maybe they even shouldn't be, but they are. And I do think it's a little bit dangerous.
So one kind of nuance here is coaches are being requested, coordinators are being requested for doing their own interviews to be a head coach somewhere else. That obviously happened a bunch with Clint Kubiak and Adam Dirty. Those are now done, at least for this period. But I want to ask you about a specific scenario. It's a hypothetical. But let's say that, you know, Clint Kubiak has on good word, he's going to get one of these jobs and he's going to accept one of these jobs. He just knows that now through that process. The human side of that, like, is there a potential risk of like, you know, that your family's going to move, you're going to be having to go somewhere else. Whatever happens here is not going to be what you're dealing with next year. Is there any chance that that affects just the human side of how you prepare for a game like this?
Yeah. There's 24 hours in the day. And it's not even like your fault. Usually when you get a head coaching job, you have to change your cell phone number right away. I don't know if people know this, but typically how like coaching staffs get put together,
right,
is not like LinkedIn or something like that. It's everybody who knows somebody who knows you kind of calls on your behalf. There's guys that are out of work right now. There's eight head coaching opportunities right now. So now all the eight coaches are done and eight coaching staffs are all out of work. And now they're all looking for the right opportunity to come back. So let's just say that Clint Kubiak gets named head coach. That phone is blowing off the hook. Everyone that he's known, everybody that he's friends with, everybody that he's friends with that has a friend that needs a job, like it's just going to be nonstop. And so like there's a balance there. Like you got to like try to be all in. And then, you know, I dealt with this. Like we had coaches that would interview for jobs while it's going on. And I'm sorry, like I know your attention, you're doing your best you can, but like 6 hours on a Zoom and whatever preparation, like that's not nothing.
Right.
And even not even to be a head coach, you know, maybe it's a quarterback coach who just took a OC job, you know, that happened also while we're in the playoffs going into the divisional round. You know, we start out the week and, you know, it just was a little different. Couldn't tell what was up, but something was up. And, you know, like you're human. There's no ill will or anything like that, but it's just a factor because sometimes when you're all the way in with coaching or game planning, you find like something that unlocks, like it unlocks the game plan. Like you mentioned the Rams. I'm just thinking about this real quick. we in our screen game against the Rams, like we love screens against the Rams, but only if they rushed like straight up field, not if they did their like little four man TE stunts and line stunts. We hated it. Like it was just like, we had no way. Well, deep in our, you know, third time playing these guys, talking to somebody like Grant Wistrom or one of those guys, it was like, hey, if you want to take the TE stunts off, just make an ISIC call. We're like, what do you mean? Like, oh, that's their call. Whenever they want to take off the TE stunts, they just say, ice it, ice it, ice it. So here we are, when we're going to run a screen against them the third time, we're up there like, blue 42, ice it, ice it, ice it. Blue 42, ice it, not. And like now all of a sudden, we just made the call to take off their line stunt. You know, like, but like, you're not going to, like, sometimes it just takes everything. And so like, if you're going and doing the other stuff, I don't know. I just think it hurts the chances of finding those nuggets.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I also think there's this human part of, like, okay, and you can't really finalize it until you're done. So like every week you win, it's like a little bit more pressure builds on having to, like, your staff that you're going to build is getting hired by other people. And so, yeah, it's a unique kind of situation. It's better than the old Miss situation.
Yeah, I don't think the coaches are any less out, because they're like, you're right. They're like, you're running a marathon and like you can see the finish line. I think they're all the way in, but it is hard. Just your time. It's just like your time is tough on that.
So, every coach everywhere will always say football game's a football game. It's like the Hoosiers, like measuring the court and the basket. It's the same thing, right? I'm curious from your perspective, is playoff football different than regular season football?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I don't have necessarily a way to quantify it, but I could tell you, like, nothing really hurts. You know what I mean? Like the injuries that hurt all year long, like, they don't hurt. The thing I could equate it to, I think, is, you know, I don't know if you ever, like, you know, like played sports and had to do conditioning at the end. And let's just say you're running like 18 gassers or something like that. And like, they're hard, you know, right? Whatever, they're hard. And like the number 17 is hard in order, for whatever reason. And I wasn't really this way, but like, I feel like everyone else was like on 18, like no one's tired anymore. Like they run their fastest time at eight on the 18th sprint. And like, what was that? Like, were you saving up? And like, I don't think you're necessarily saving up, but there's just something about like, we're right there. We're right there. And so like your last one in some way, like, wasn't as hard, and you're just excited to do it. And it's the fastest one. That to me is playoff football. And then when everybody's playing at that like heightened level, it's just like, that's when they say, oh, the game is faster. Like, well, how's the game faster? Like, we were trying as hard as we could the last one. How's it any faster? It's stuff like that. And I can't explain it, but it's just like, I promise you, it's I don't care the sport, that last wind sprint, unless you're completely out of shape, it's usually the fastest.
Well, I've heard from AB, you know, you are an avid exerciser with the family. So I doubt that's an issue for you, but this is a hard question to articulate. So hang with me if you can. You've been part of playoff teams that have played one game and been done, and that's the end of the season. You've been part of playoff teams where you've gotten all the way to the Super Bowl. I'm curious, if you think back to those times, could you feel that like this was potentially like this was your last game? Could you feel like other times where it's like, no, this is the next game, but we're going to win? Like, did you feel a difference between those teams and going into those games?
The mindset was always play every play like it's your last, play every game like it's your last. Like, I think that was like the sort of also a thing that like really is helpful. But no, like early on, like in that 0-3 wild card that we lost to the Packers that ended in the interception that I threw in overtime, we were just kind of happy to be there. Like, truly, like, we were just like, how fun is this? Like, we get to be here. Like, let's just have so much fun. After that, no, it was pressure mounting. Like, we cannot miss. Like, we need to come here, Victor. We need to leave here. Like, we're not leaving here without a win. We're not. And the pressure of that is different and amounts. So I don't know if that answered your question, but like for us, that was clearly the thing. Like, losing would almost be worse than winning would be good.
And did you feel like the people on the team that had the experience felt it differently or conveyed it differently to other players? Because some of the players in that locker room probably had been through that. Some of them hadn't.
Yeah, for me, like, I played with a lot of guys that had Super Bowl rings but had nothing to do with it, you know? And so, like, I didn't need to hear from you. You know, the thing that had the most impact on me, we're playing a wild card game against, at that time, the Washington Redskins in Seattle. And I think it was 05. Is that 05? 05. Mm-hmm. And seeing the former Seahawks on the field before the game. And I think we hadn't won a playoff game since Chuck Knox was the head coach mm-hmm. in 84. And seeing like mm-hmm. Steve Largent in like that era of guys, how like into it they were and how like, I don't want to say like stressed, but like they wanted it. They almost wanted it worse than we wanted it. And we wanted it as much as we thought we could even want it. And it was just like, no. Like, this is bigger than us. This is bigger than we even realize. Something went on here in 1984 that was a big deal and hasn't happened since. Like, we need to make sure we shove this boulder up the mountain for everybody. And I don't know, like that's what I think made the biggest impact on me, seeing those guys on that day. And just kind of this mindset, like we are not losing this game. And again, you know, losing in the wild card in the Al Harris game, losing in the wild card to the Rams when we lost for the third time, you know, really on the last play of the game there also. I mean, it was just like, no, not going to happen this year. Never, like not an option.
Well, if the Seahawks do manage to win this game, Matt, is the Hasselbeck family going to make a trip out for the NFC Championship?
I mean, I think we have to. Like, it's like I don't care if I don't have a ticket and I'm in the parking lot. Like, I think it's a must. It's a championship.
Somehow, I think you'll find a ticket. Let's go. Yeah. It would be really special. I think it would also be really cool. Be Jody Allen's probably first time raising the 12 flag. You know, like the way Paul used to in that moment.
Because that was incredible. Like, of all the mm-hmm. memories when he raised that flag, I don't know, I mean, I get goosebumps. Like, that was so incredible.
It was special.
Carrie Underwood doing the national anthem, Mr. Allen raising the flag. That was, I've never been in a part of an atmosphere like that. That was unreal.
It was electric. Well, Matt, before you go, I think I heard that you were an emissary for the league internationally. Is this true?
Yeah. Right after this, I've got a I don't know, kind of like a media, like, I don't know, press conference, roundtable, what do you call it, with like 10 media outlets in Germany. Mm. As you know, the Seahawks are kind of tagged with the German market there and have played games over there. So we're talking Seahawks football. And, you know, I do know the German Seahawkers. I mean, they seem like they're everywhere.
They are.
But I don't recognize a lot of the media outlets. So I'm looking forward to like telling the story of this team, though. It's been fun, you know, kind of doing this with you this year. And, you know, not just for me, normally the national scene, but really plugging into this team and following them, and they're having this incredible year. So sharing, you know, I guess my perspective on this team and how good they are and how good they can be and how big this game is this week. It is a monster game that I think we can win. So yeah, I'm excited for it.
Well, they could not find a better person to keep them wrapped in attention for all the stories.
I'll try not to say anything wrong and like screw up international relations. You know, sometimes I talk too much.
You know what? I have a feeling you're going to do just fine. I have a feeling you're going to do just fine. Matt, thanks as always. And hopefully we'll be talking about an even bigger game next week.
That'd be great. See you, Brian.
All right. Take care. That was Matt Hasselbeck, a Ring of Honor member, top 50 player in Seahawks franchise history, and a great guy. A great guy, as is very clear every time we get to talk to him. And pretty funny knowing that the German media is going to get a whole bunch of Matt Hasselbeck time. They're fortunate for it. Folks, if you haven't already given the show a like and click subscribe, great time to do it. Good chance to go over to patreon.com/hawkblogger, sign up, get ad-free audio of this show. I hear people sometimes, they're like, man, the free audio version has a lot of ads. And I'm like, well, it's just the way it works. If you want no ads, sign up at patreon.com/hawkblogger. You get your own little RSS feed link, and you can put that in any of your podcast systems that you listen to your podcasts on, and you'll get ad-free audio. So great way to do that. Plus, you get access to the Discord server, and you get verified over at hbtix.com, hbtix.com. And folks, I can tell you some good news. First of all, some silly news. I made a mistake on the platform yesterday trying to do something helpful, and I did something that messed up the system, and a bunch of tickets got delisted. I realized this after a couple of people were like, what happened to my listing? And fixed it. So that's fixed, by the way. And in case you're wondering why your tickets disappeared, they should now all be there again. But I did a little analytics work, not on football, but on fan interest based off of every message that's sent. I get a notification for every time somebody expresses interest in a ticket on HB Tix, sends an email, all that kind of stuff, right? And so I went back and figured out how to find out the interest level for each month of the season. And it's been building and building. And if you, when I looked at the month of January, which is only 13 days old, it's not even a full month, we're more than double the level of interest in terms of Seahawks fans reaching out to other Seahawks fans about tickets on HB Tix. So it is popping over there. We're getting a lot of activity. That's a really good sign from my perspective about Seahawks fans' interest and eagerness and demand for attending this game. And so let's hope that that's a good sign in terms of how many fans are, you know, the right fans in the stands. And I'm going to continue to remind people what I've said before, which is you are going to see 49ers fans in that 100 level behind the visitors bench. Please let other people know that. It is not season ticket holders selling those tickets. Most of those are ticket brokers who are not fans of the team, but just have those tickets to sell them. And so most likely you're going to see a fair number of 49ers fans. They're going to pay top dollar for those tickets. Hopefully they go home very sad, but every other part of the stadium pretty much should be, you know, as many Seahawks fans as possible. So I'm looking forward to seeing how Seahawks fans turn out. I think the fact that this game, if you didn't hear, this game will start at 5 o'clock on Saturday, 5 p.m. Pacific time. So you'll have the whole afternoon to watch the early game, the Broncos against the Bills. Great early game to watch. Number one seed over there in the AFC against, you know, maybe the best quarterback in the playoffs and Josh Allen. You know, get yourself pre-gamed ready, and then at 5 o'clock just let loose. And I've been there. The best atmospheres for Seahawks games in the playoffs, they're all great, but the best ones are where fans have a chance to spend the day watching other games and then enjoy what comes after. Like, they are ready for it. And so personally, I'm looking forward to that. The other thing that you may, this was a little bit lesser announced. I didn't publish a bunch about this, but they already have published the conference championship timing. And the way this works, if you don't know, is the AFC and the NFC conference championship games, they rotate time slots each year. So this year it's the NFC's turn to have the late window. So if the Seahawks win, they will play 3:30 on Sunday, January 25th. So they will have the late game again in that case and be able to watch the AFC championship, which, for what it's worth, has been my experience in the other two times, if I remember right. Definitely for the 2005 squad, you knew already, watched the Steelers thing, knew that the Steelers were going to be the team you played. But having a NFC Championship Sunday where you get to pregame early, and it is crazy downtown in those situations in terms of, I remember there was like every single retail outlet in SoDo, which is south downtown in Seattle, for people that aren't from here, was like, they literally were unboxing flat screen TVs and hanging them up on walls and connecting them to cable, because there were so many people in and around the area that would just wanted to hang out and drink and eat before this game. It went well beyond the bars, well beyond the restaurants. There were art galleries, like everywhere was trying to bring Seahawks fans in, and it was just, it felt like such a community and communal experience, just everybody there knowing what they were there for and the just collective energy. It was so amazing. Like that 2005 NFC Championship, as much as the win against the 49ers was the best game I've ever been at, the experience and the atmosphere at the game against the Carolina Panthers in 2005 was never be beat. Will never be beat. It's hard to replicate your first time. And that's what that was. So I'm just looking forward to it. I'm not looking forward to the conference championship yet in terms of like ignoring this game, but odds are, I do believe the Seahawks have a better chance of playing that game than not. And we'll get more into the matchup and some of the details of it tomorrow in First Look. Grant Cohen will join me tomorrow again, so we'll have that going on. Wednesday night, 5 p.m. Pacific time, it'll be Real Hawk Talk with the OG crew, Nathan Ernst, Evan Hill, myself, and Jeff Simmons. Thursday, we've got confirmation. We will get not just Brett Coleman from Bootleg Football back. We will get Mina Kimes from ESPN, friend of the show, back. We will get Brian Baldinger, Baldy, will be on the show. So we'll have a blowout Thursday. And then Friday, we're going to have Jeffrey Dean Morgan again. We're going to have Dave Bowling and Mike Sando again. So tons and tons. And there's still one more guest. I'm waiting for final word from this person, but I think there's one more special guest I'm hopeful we'll be able to land this week. So keep your eyes and ears out for that. Make sure you subscribe to get all that information. I already pumped it once. I'll say it again. If you want one of these shirts, 12 greater than 49, it's a great week to be wearing them. Get them at simplyseattle.com. Use promo code HawkBlogger15. You can get all sorts of great stuff. If you want Division Champ, hats, they've got those now. If you want the ones the guys were wearing, I was wearing my beanie yesterday, which I love this beanie, this playoff beanie. They've got those there. They got all sorts of great stuff. SimplySeattle.com, promo code HawkBlogger15. And we'll see if I can get focused again. There we go. And then also, if you have not gone over to the Sleeper app, now is a great time to grab the Sleeper app, download it, use promo code Hawks, get up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions do apply. So see Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. And I mentioned this yesterday, but we just started working with a new brand. And I've tried to be particular in who we work with. It's a brand called Duer, D-U-E-R. And they make primarily jeans, but they make all sorts of great clothes. And they're really interested in getting like into the Northwest market. And so we've been working with them. And I got my jeans from them this weekend. I got a shirt from them. And as I said yesterday, I'm not the easiest fit with jeans. I don't know if you've ever had, if jeans are easy for you guys, but they're not always easy for me. I'm built like a soccer player. So they're fantastic is the short story. Like they're really, like honestly, I could tell you authentically, really surprised how great they are. They're awesome. So we got a special deal for you. If you go to Shop Duer, which is S-H-O-P-D-U-E-R. So Shop Duer. .com/hawk. So do that URL shopdoer.com/hawk, H-A-W-K. You get 15% off your first order, and that is a great deal. So take advantage while it's available. We're going to be working with them at least through the playoffs. So looking forward to continuing with them. All right. So let's see. Do we have any super chats? I don't see any in YouTube. Let me check to see if we've got any on Venmo. Venmo.com/hawkblogger is the place to go. And let me do a quick check real quick. I also appreciate the folks that have been contributing to help with, like, if you make a sale on HB Tix and tipping over here on Venmo. Really appreciate it. Just so you know, like not to make this, I'm doing it and I'm happy to do it, but the platform that I built HB Tix on, has a usage metering. And so every time somebody uses it, sends an email, it ticks up on usage. And we're so over our usage. I'm paying overage fees for HP Tix this month. So every little contribution really does help. I do appreciate it. Like I said, I am happy to take a loss on this because I think it's something I really care about, but I do appreciate it. All right. So thanks to Brandon for tipping for, he sold his tickets. I heard from him yesterday and he gave a tip. I appreciate that. Francisco, I'm reading these now first before I say them out loud because I feel so bad about yesterday. That was really funny. Francisco Gonzalez says, Brian, as someone who asks Coach McDonald questions regularly, what are your thoughts on the Jaguars reporter who gave kind words to Jags head coach Liam Cohen during the postgame press conference? I'm so glad you asked that. Like, I keep forgetting about this. I actually want to talk about it with Sando and Bowling on Friday. So help me remember if I forget. But if you don't know the story, there was a reporter who in the postgame press conference for the Jaguars after they lost and their season was over against the Bills, basically just really expressed gratitude and positive support for the job that Liam Cohen did. It wasn't a question. It was just like an outpouring of like support and kindness, I guess. And Liam Cohen was like, thank you. And reporters from all around the web just roundly rolled their eyes and were upset about it. You don't do this. You're just given, you're either a fan or you're a reporter. You're never both. Even from Albert Breer, who I have a ton of respect for, was like, you know, I gave up being a fan years ago. I can't even imagine rooting for a specific NFL team. This just isn't okay. And I have a few thoughts on it. So first of all, I think it was nice to have a moment of kindness in the world, period. Like, it's not a particularly kind world, especially now. I think when someone takes a chance to just express gratitude and support, it's fine. Like, is that the best use of that time? Probably not. Could it have been done privately? Absolutely. Would that have probably been a better choice? Yes. So like lots of things there I think make sense. But no part of me is like, God, what's this world coming to that this woman is just being nice to the coach? Like, it's a pox on our profession. And I'm like, stop taking yourself so seriously. Like, come on. It's her choice to show up that way in that moment. It's also the Jaguars' choice whether they credential people to be in those moments and whether those people are doing things that they think are okay. PR staff, literal PR staff for the team. Now they are reporters, they're writers, but they are employed by the team, ask questions at these events. That's not objective. They're absolutely limited in what they ask and how they ask it. They're going to almost always be positive. They're never going to ask hard questions because that's not their job. So you already have this dynamic in these press conferences where you've got people who are paid to be supportive of the person they're asking questions for. So don't pretend that they're not there, because they are, and they're not the same. And then the whole fan reporter thing, obviously I have takes on that. Tell me that Robert Mays doesn't do a good job on the Athletic Football Show because he's a Bears fan. Tell me that Mina Kimes doesn't do a good job of an analysis across the NFL because she's a Seahawks fan or because she does the Rams pregame show. Tell me that the players that played for their team or got cut by a team are not somewhat biased in how they ask questions or who they ask questions to. Tell me that relationships don't affect questions from reporters, from national people, who they get access to, who they give information to. It is total bullshit that the profession of journalism, especially in sports, is some high society of objectivity. It's not. It is up to the consumer of this information to be literate and understand like who's asking the question, what's their motivation, who's answering the question, what's their motivation, and figure out for yourself what's real and what's not. And my rule, like I am a fan first. I will always be a fan first. Am I also a reporter? Yeah, I am. I had a long back and forth with somebody on email about this yesterday who I appreciated his time he took to share some of his concerns. But I ultimately, what I care about is what's the quality of the question and what's the quality of the analysis and am I gaining anything from it? I don't give a shit if you're a fan, if you're a reporter, if you work for the team, if you're a PR person, if you're a puppet dog with a cigar in your mouth. It's like, it's an entertainment business. So let's not take ourselves so seriously here. So I very strongly disagree with this whole notion that reporters are high and mighty and like some elite class of objectivity. I don't believe it. I just don't. I respect and appreciate reporters that aspire to that and hold to that. I think that's great. I'm not meaning to demean them, but I think the vitriol towards this woman is a lot of bad stuff. I'm not a big supporter of it. So hopefully that answers your question. Sorry for getting on my soapbox, but I do care about that topic quite a bit. And as someone who's just a fan and a consumer of content, I just want freaking good analysis. Like someone do their job, like dig deeper. Don't ask the stupid question you've heard the answer to a million times. And like pry a little deeper and maybe like that's one of the reasons I love the Athletic Football Show, because I learn when I listen to that show. The prep work that Robert does, that Derek does, that Dave does, it's good. It's good. They dig in below surface level and I learn something about the teams that they're analyzing. That's what I care about. If they are hardcore fans of a specific team, don't care. Do not care. All right. Sappy Hawks, SYPP Hawk, I don't know how you want that pronounced, says, got my championship tickets yesterday. Can't wait. Wow. You are aggressive in getting those NFC conference tickets already. I love that. Pokey Tom says, wife and I are making our first trip to Seattle from Iowa this weekend in the game. Any recommendations on pre-post game spots near the stadium, Pioneer Square? Go freaking Hawks. So I might record a video on this because I get this question a lot year round from people that are planning their first trip out to Seattle. I'll give you some quick answers to this right now, and then maybe I'll do I'll upload a video just on this, and you guys can share it around if you want. First of all, I'll just say I have different requirements of my pregame experience than most people might, and so I'll just share my criteria, and I'll also say this week's a little different. So my pregame criteria is you've got to have Sunday ticket. I've got to be able to see any game that I want to see. I don't want to be locked into just what's on local broadcasts. So not a lot of the bars do not have Sunday ticket. And so you're stuck with like Red Zone or, you know, if you're lucky, a lot of times it's just the local, whatever's on the networks. The next criteria I have is they have to have good nachos. It's part of my criteria. So my buddy and I, we've hunted through multiple restaurants over the years downtown and had places that we really like the nachos. And then the third criteria is just like energy level. Like you want the atmosphere to be a little bit lively. I like a lot of the places downtown, but some of them are a little bit quiet and reserved. And so like, I like a little bit more energy for pregame. So yeah, there's a few places that meet that bar. Unfortunately, I'm not going to share my favorite spots because honestly, my pregame is private for me. And so I lead now kind of a bit of a public life, at least in the Seahawks world. And my preference generally is to not have like a bunch of folks like coming down to try to hang out pregame. Like, no offense. It's just kind of like my time with my friend and my time to kind of be private. But I will say that you can't go wrong around the stadium. I think there's a lot of great spots around the stadium. I'm pulling up because I forgot. Some of them are brand new. There's a place that used to be where Pyramid Brewing is, and it is now Hatback, the Hatback Bar and Grill. That's a great spot. So I recommend it, and they've got a lot of seats. There is Jimmy's on First, I think, is a nice spot. If you can get in, it's a little bit busy. Let me see. There's one other spot that I was going to, the Hall, H-A-L-L, the Hall on Occidental, I think is nice. And they have some outdoor stuff there as well. So all those spots are really good. And then other folks should share their recommendations along the way. I will say that for this weekend, it doesn't really matter if they have Sunday ticket or not, because there's only one game going to be on. So any place you go that you find good food and, you know, good seating is perfectly fine. Good question. All right. Average guy has become a YouTube member. Welcome to the crew. Great to have you. And let me just see. I'm going to scan to see if there's any other recommendations that people have here in chat. What's the sandwich place near the stadium that everyone talks about? Yes. Sandwich Shop Soto, Seattle. It is, well, there's Paseo, which people really like, but that's not the one I'm thinking. I think it's Tats. Tats is the one that I'm thinking of. Yeah, Tats East Coast Steak and Subs. Usually there's a line, but it doesn't take that too long to wait in the line. Got great, great sandwiches there. Yeah, I like Tats. We got a recommendation from Matt Cook, who says Sluggers, which is also a cool bar. It's old school. He loves that one. So all these spots are pretty good. I will say, like, I don't love Seahawks Stadium District's like pregame the way I do some of these other stadiums, like in cities. I wish it was better. I wish there was just like some better overall experience. I think some of the bars I mentioned are good starts, and I think improvements on that. But if you go to a game in Arizona, like the pregame situation there is so fun and accessible and great. I think the pregame situation in, like, honestly, a lot of these stadiums, when I went to Nashville, obviously is great. New Orleans, Atlanta, like there's a lot of spots that are pretty cool. I would like to see the Soto District to kind of catch up in the fun department, personally, but that's me. All right. I think we've covered everything. Let me see if there's any news that I need to be aware of. Sorry, I was just checking to see if I got any messages. So let's see. Oh, a little bit of news, I will say, from Mike McDonald yesterday. It sounds like Elijah Arroyo may play in this game, which I know everyone's like, oh, well, he started practicing last week. I'm like, yeah, but it's a 21-day window and he had a knee injury. You don't know exactly when they're going to activate him, but it sounds like, I would say likely, that he's going to be active for this game. We also got some word that maybe George Helani and Chaz Surratt may be the last two activations. It sounds like they're going to start practicing this week. Mike McDonald wasn't clear on that, but that was the interpretation I had. It would be good and a little bit bad if they both got activated, because those would be their last two activations. I personally want to hold out hope that maybe, you know, maybe by the Super Bowl, Torrey Horton would be available and they'd be able to use that last activation. But if they use it, fine. Like, Chaz Surratt's been a great special teams player for them when he's been healthy. And, you know, obviously George Helani's been a very good special teams player, as well as a third string running back when available as well. We've got some coaching news. Kevin Stefanski is doing an interview with the Dolphins. today. Interesting, the Bucks are interviewing Mike Kafka as their OC. And Arthur Blank says that Matt Ryan will let the head coach pick the coaches and the GM will be the GM in the traditional way. So we'll see what goes on there. I think the Atlanta job is one to really watch with Clint Kubiak. And we'll just see if any of these other guys interviewing change the math at all. But my current guess is that Clint Kubiak is going to end up in Atlanta. So we'll see. All right. I think that's Packers defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley interviewing with the Titans today, interview with the Dolphins tomorrow, the Falcons and the Raiders on Thursday. That's interesting. I think we also heard that John Harbaugh interviewed with the Cardinals, which I think is pretty fascinating. That's one that I was curious about. It would be really amazing if the Cardinals finally got a program builder in that building. So that's one to watch. Yeah, I think that's it. All right, folks. Oh, wait, there was a super chat that came in late. I don't know. Looks like it's empty. So sorry if there was a question there. Here's one. Trapcat 88. I'm at least happy we're not on CBS for the game. Last thing I want is to hear Romo in the broadcast. Yes. Well, I get it. I'm going to be at the game, so I feel for you, but that's my way of avoiding it. It's Zeke says, you think DK still thinks the grass is greener? Man, another drop for DK Metcalf. Early exit. I'm very, very glad to not be a Steelers fan. I feel like the Steelers are stuck in the same cycle the Seahawks were stuck in when Pete Carroll had his last few years here, where you're winning enough to make the playoffs or be close to the playoffs, not good enough to actually do anything of interest, and your roster is older and expensive and way more expensive than it is good. I'll give him credit. I thought after the Seahawks played them in week two and beat them, I thought they were done. I thought they were going to be a below 500 team. The fact that they ended up winning their division is crazy. I do think they would have been better off if the Ravens had made that kick and that they had lost and fired their coach and turned over the whole thing. But they didn't. So I'm assuming Tomlin will be back, and that's a gross roster situation. Very much not a fan of what's going on in Pittsburgh. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. I will be back tonight at 5:00 with Seahawks Collective with Annabelle Hasselback, as well as Rob Staton and Mike Dugar. So we'll see you there. Until then, have a great rest of your day.